Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for, oh, Lordy, really? April 18th, 2018. With us today, we have Sylvan and Theo, Joe, Matthias, and Andy Turley. I would say that we haven't seen Theo, Sylvan, and Andy in a while, but seeing how I haven't been around very much, me, Sean, I'm not really sure whether that's true or not, but let's dig in. Let's dig in. Let's start with the RFC of the day. This is RFC number 121. It's from Benoit, and it's subtyping exclusion is the title.
It's a very nice clickbait title.
It really is, hey, Joe.
Look, if anybody's going to be doing that accent, it's going to be me, not you, okay?
To say I have misgivings about this is a, yeah. I think this is problematic, and the operator is problematic too. And I feel like I must have missed a memo or something, because Paul's comments about using tag union types, I have no idea how that begins to solve, well, first of all, why we would ever want those, and second of all, why it would solve the problem.
I don't understand how it solved the problem either. I think my only comments so far have mostly been asking Paul how that would solve the problem, because I'm not sure. I felt like maybe I was missing something, but I'm glad I'm not the only one who doesn't understand how the tag unions would solve the problem.
Yeah. Is anyone up for trying to help me?
I might be able to help a little bit, or we can, I saw Benoit said he was going to be a little bit late due to some technical issues. So we could hold off and discuss this when he's here if you want.
I'd go for some filling in now, just so that, yeah, I don't have to go through it again when Benoit's here, if you're up for it.
Yeah, sure. So where do you want to start?
Why?
Yeah. So there's do you recall the issue we've been discussing about there's a hole in the type system where we currently have unsound stuff in the standard library from our checks that a runtime match will not violate capabilities have some blind spots when it comes to type parameters. Is that ringing a bell?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So the goal of this relative complement type operator that he has as the, listed as the companion RFC, is intended to address that issue kind of in full as a way of saying that you basically want to you want your type parameter constraint to exclude certain
Check out issue 2584 on the Pony repo. Brian, who works at Wallaloo Labs now, opened that up. This RFC came out of Benoit looking at that issue. Like, it's not like full thing, but this RFC came up to address, like, cases like that.
2584.
Yeah. Problem with matching generic types.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, hey, and Paul's here.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, hey.
All right. So we're bound over A. It's A or none. We say, hey, A, are you A? If so, A. Otherwise, error. on.
Yeah. So one example of the issue is that if your type argument to simple box is something that matches none, you have a problem. Which in the standard library, we have some cases where we have a private primitive being used instead of none, which is less problematic because you can't use a private primitive in there. But if you have something like any, an empty interface that will match that private primitive.
I'm very confused. I'm looking at 2584 and I'm going, I've run tests over that previously that worked.
It does on 21. It does on 021.3. It doesn't on master.
Okay.
Related to 2182 was, that's an issue, not
Yeah, I mean, I understand that there's an issue with matching over capabilities. I think implementing this kind of type language stuff feels very much like the wrong approach for that. In fact, I would rather go down a different route. I.e. a route that I've been on for a little while, which is being able to at no cost, essentially, carry the underlying capability. That's not the viewpoint adapted capability, but the underlying capability, which combined with the viewpoint adapted capability gives you the correct capability to carry that in the object. And then this goes away, right? Because you can say, oh yeah, sure. If it's any ref or none, well, we're actually checking if the thing is ref. And since none is val, it's not a ref, problem solved.
I think that there still might be some issues like
there's in this code example. Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
There's not a, so even if we ignore capabilities for a moment and the soundness issues regarding to not being able to runtime match on capabilities, which I understand that's one thing that you approach to solve with that approach. I think even if you ignore capabilities, it's still kind of problematic that we don't really have a clear pattern for introducing. This kind of marker type that could work to how should we say it? Like all of our standard library. Let me find the example from the standard library here. But like our standard library stuff that needs to match a like the absence of A, where A is a type parameter. I think most of it will break if you do stuff like giving an empty interface for A, because none will match that. Or your private primitive you're using will match that, regardless of capability issues.
Okay.
And I think that's the issue that Paul is trying to tackle with the tag unions conversation. But I think Paul's here now, so he can maybe speak up a little bit about that himself.
And Benoit's here, too.
Yeah, so even without talking about capabilities, I think that having like two match patterns that overlap, well, like that semantically you don't want them to overlap, but they happen to overlap because you instantiated a type parameter with the same as the other one.
Yeah.
I think like it changes the semantics of the code just because your types happen to overlap, but you don't really want them to.
Right. I think that's, again, something that's pretty... Yeah, I mean,
that's what unions mean, but...
Right, it's exactly what they mean. So if they overlap, I mean, there's a couple of different strategies there. If they are, if if you have a subset, right? If one case is a subset of the other case, then we should reorder that, right? Silently in code generation and check the smaller case before the larger case. Pretty straightforward. Like that's something that wouldn't even be that hard to implement. If it's overlapping, as opposed to, you know what I mean? If there's some intersection, but it is not a subset, then the order of operations is the order of operations defined, and that's it.
Yeah. So I think, but the reason why I like the idea of having an extra operator on the constraint language to exclude and basically prevent overlap is you have a way to say, okay, I implemented this data structure and it's a library, anyone can use it. But if you give type arguments that overlap in type, then the data structure breaks, right? The logic is wrong. And for whatever reason, you know, I didn't have another way to implement it. So I want to be able to communicate to the compiler to not let you reify my data structure with type arguments that I know will break.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which I think is the point of constraints, right?
Sure. Yeah. Modulo the whole with capabilities, which I think is very, very real, obviously. I'm having a bit of trouble in the sense of if we have subset reordering and we understand that overlaps are overlaps, it's not immediately apparent to me what the case is that is the example of what you're talking about. I'm sure I'm just missing something obvious. I apologize.
But sometimes you want, like, the meaning you want to get to your program is that it can be an A or B, but you want to be able to distinguish it between the two, even if the two are generic and the user of your library happens to put in the same type for the two. I mean, imagine, like, if we had, like, a result type which has two parameters, like the value and the error type, you want to be able to distinguish between the value and the error case. And you want to be able to implement your library generically, even though the user can instantiate that with two different types, with twice the same type.
Sure, if the user does that, they'll get exactly what they deserve. They're not going to be able to distinguish if they say that the result type is an error type, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, tag unions is a feature that I think would be useful independently that unions can't solve.
Yeah, so to give a concrete example of, I actually had this come up yesterday, last night while I was working on some stuff. An example where I wanted something like tag unions and I ended up implementing it with like a union of tuples where the first element of the tuple is like a primitive telling me which kind of thing it is. So just to give a concrete example of a case where that's valuable,
that's the implementation of a tag union, right? There is no other implementation of a tag union. After compilation, obviously there is at the language level.
Right.
If we're talking about a situation where it's like some none or none, and we were trying to distinguish between some none or none, there's a significant amount of overhead of saying we're going to start using tagged unions, right? Like, there's a reason why having tagged unions is basically a performance problem on average, right? The same reason that Rust has tried very hard to make sure that they don't have to have tagged unions is largely the same reason we've tried to make sure we don't have them, but rather can have it in line in the type. on the other hand, you know, if we go to tagged unions, well, you know, that means we can, in some sense, we avoid boxing numeric types that are in unions. But on the other hand, the other side of that is it's the only reason we're avoiding boxing numeric types in unions is because we're going to box absolutely everything that's in a union. And that doesn't seem grand.
Yeah, I don't think Paul was suggesting that all unions should become tag unions.
So that we'll have two completely different ways of doing unions.
Yeah, I mean, the way I was imagining it, and I might be off base because I, you know, I'm not Paul, but the way I was imagining it was basically syntax sugar for what I was doing with tuples and having the first element be a marker type.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing is, with this, like, you pay a cost of boxing your tuple and having an extra direction, but you can, after you reify, if you notice that the types are actually different, then you can avoid this and just use the type identifiers. And it's only in the case where you can't
if it's sugar, right? You have to, right? Is this pervasive or is this not pervasive? If it's sugar, then no, we can't. There's a binary representation there. If it's pervasive and we're saying all unions are tagged unions, we can, but then what we're saying is that we're going to try and come up with a scheme for inferring tagging. There's a lot of papers on that. There's a lot of papers on how do you drop the tag in ML style languages. I can't say that there are any actual ML style languages that implement any of those papers because they all have, you know, various implications.
Yeah.
It worries me to go down the route of saying that there's two completely different ways to do unions. It worries me to go down the route of saying we're gonna tag all unions. It worries me of going down the route of doing this for what is, to my mind, an edge case that says, who cares? If somebody implements their option type of some none or none, right? If it's A or none and they instantiate A with none, congratulations. It's always going to say none. I just don't see why that's problematic. So maybe Joe, can you explain to me in the thing that you're working on? Because I think I'm missing something.
In the case where we have subset reordering, as you talked about, and in the case where we can runtime match on capabilities, and then, you know, for other tagged union cases like the one I was working on, which happens to just to give the quick rundown, it was like dealing with a stream of tokens, and I wanted some of them to be able to represent the number of tokens coming, and then some of them to be able to represent an arbitrary A, which somebody might decide to reify as a U size. So that was my case for that. I mean, if we want to say that those cases you just do tag unions yourself with tuples, that's probably fine. I think subset reordering and...
In much the same way that map essentially does exactly that, right? It, under the hood, cheekily implements tagged unions by having a tuple of key and value, or, you know, a collection of marker types.
Right.
It cheekily is doing the same thing.
So I think if we do have subset reordering and we do have runtime matching on capabilities, then I think the problems do probably go away. But I don't know. I think runtime matching on capability is something that I guess we will need to talk more about because I don't know. If you think they're a good idea, I definitely, you know, like, trust that because you've been thinking about it a lot more than I have. But, you know, I am a little bit worried on the face of it about extra overhead.
But. Yeah, of course. I completely understand that. So, yeah. The overhead, uh, Yeah, all I can say right now is that that's not your, that's not a concern. The it's actually, and I can explain in detail why, but it maybe if you have a little time after the call, we can go over that.
Sure. Yeah.
Here, let me just type a thing into Slack. But, and I don't want to, I don't want to be, you know, making promises that, oh yeah, someday there will be the ability to do this, right? It's got to, it has to happen fairly soon or else what's the point? And you got to go down, we got to go down another way of closing the hole in the type system. And so the no subtype thing, if I try and unpick this a little bit, the no subtype thing is actually something that I think is extremely useful for as a concept for subtyping on a particular instance of a type, right? Like the fact that, for example, if we said that we had a particular instance of a type and we said for this instance, we're going to say that you're not allowed to do subtyping, that would allow us to eliminate the concept of struct from the language, because we could say, ah, when you have something that is both not allowed to do subtyping, then it doesn't need a type descriptor. In much the same way that we can say if something is embedded in another in a parent structure, then you don't need GC information, right? Because the only reason we ever need type descriptors is due to virtual dispatch and pattern matching on type. And if you can't do subtyping, that's fine. So on an individual instance, that's really valuable. I think if we're starting to go down the route of needing to annotate those to close the hole in the type system, I feel like we're doing it wrong. On the other hand, I want to make clear that I think Benoit's RFC actually totally makes sense. Like to do what he wants to do with it. Oh, Benoit's on the call. Benoit, to do what you want to do with it. It works. It totally works. But I want to separate that one from the constraint language extension of being able to say essentially not. Because I think adding that is just a natural extension of the algebra. I think that's good. I don't know immediately where I'd want to use it, but who cares? It's an extension of the algebra, and it seems to make sense. Does that make any sense?
Wait. So can you clarify? You think that the relative complement operator that he alluded to in that RFC sounds like a reasonable idea?
Yeah. I do. I think. I think I'm not sure that's the right way to express it. That expresses it as a set operation, and maybe that is the right way to express it. The other way we can express it, and certainly we're doing union and intersection types right now, so expressing it as a set operator makes sense in that context. The other way to express it is not, right? If you imagine a constraint language that says there exists some type variable A where A is B, and is C or is D and is not E. And then it's expressing it as a Boolean language as opposed to it with set notation. Either is fine. That one seems to just be much more natural to my mind. I don't know. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I think something I commented in the RFC is that I would kind of like to see this annotation go away once we have another a more general solution where we don't need it.
Yeah, I was reading that. So maybe that tells us exactly what to do. is for me to shut up and we do it Benoit's way until we can pattern match on capability at low/zero cost. And then we go back and pull it out. And That's, yeah, maybe that's the right way to do it. Does anyone else have any ideas?
So we're saying we would put this thing in and then we would remove the feature later?
Yeah, so it sort of makes Benoit's choice of doing it as an annotation make a lot of sense. Is, yeah, it goes in as an annotation. It helps for very specific cases right now. And as soon as we can, we also do subset reordering on match clauses because we can, and that's easy to do. And then when we can cheaply check capabilities at runtime, then actually that opens up a whole bunch of stuff, right? We can make the pattern matching constraints much milder and much less complex, to be honest, and check the stuff dynamically when we need to. And I don't mean to frighten anyone with check the stuff dynamically. I mean that in a nice, safe, very, very, very cheap / free way.
Right. I mean, the same way we check out other types at runtime.
Yeah, exactly. Literally exactly the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine how maybe this is what you're picturing, but you could encode, a ref and a val as having different type descriptors with like one of the bits flipped or something like that.
Yeah. You're on the right track for sure.
Anyway, yeah, it sounds like the consensus then is we can move forward with this as a temporary measure and then remove it later when we have a better generic plan.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Anyone else?
I think that makes sense.
Okay, cool. Also, a special thank you to everyone for walking me through this.
All right, then. I guess, Benoit, that would be maybe a little bit of updating with some more background, blah, 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 and then final comment period.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Oh, by the way, I'm not familiar with annotations because they're not used a lot in Pony. Can you just put an example in the RFC? Because there's not actually any example of it being used.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thanks.
Well, we're at the halfway point. Does anybody have anything that they want to discuss? I have one thing, but I'll wait until we get through. Anybody else?
Yeah. Since we have both Sylvain and Paul on the call, I'd like to discuss 2601, since I think it's a pretty important issue potentially in the implementation of the compiler.
Ah, excellent.
Is that a request or an issue?
It's an issue.
Okay. Yep. There we go. Apparently, it doesn't matter whether you put issue or pull in the
GitHub doesn't
URL. Care. It just redirects you. So, like, I don't understand the.
I think they used to actually have a feature to convert a issue to a pull request, or maybe vice versa.
I don't understand how that makes any sense, but I believe you.
I think it was intended to be like if somebody was working on a, you see an issue ticket, you pick it up for work, and you convert it to a pull request with your code. But they got rid of that workflow.
This is a good point. Oh, this is one of those things where I remember working on that, and I don't remember why. Damn it. Just a second here, and let me look at the code. Well, theoretically, anyway.
Yeah, what you're saying makes sense. Let me just try it.
All right.
Because if you have an X which is bound by read and a Y which is bound by read as well, then if I understand that correctly, you'd be able to say that one is a subtype of the other, even though one could be like ref in the other box and they shouldn't. And I think that's what this is.
This
doing.
Looks like a bug. I mean, we're even at the even in line. If you check out line 134, it specifically says for cap read, what are the supertypes? Box. But then line 73.
Yeah.
Messes that up.
I think we just need to remove the reflexive part, and then the rest is correct.
I think it means that we will need to
add a few things, yeah.
Yeah, add a few cases down below. But as I recall, is cap subcap? Is not about aliasing, so it doesn't require ISO hat in order to be a subtype of ISO. It just requires ISO to be a subtype of ISO.
Yeah, yeah. So I've just tried it, and this lets you transform a box into a ref, so it's definitely wrong.
Okay, cool.
I'll add the example to the issue.
Yeah, so I think we just need the reflexive cases added, like line 83, 101, 116, mm-hmm. blah, 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 and remove the first clause out of 73. The second clause, obviously, is totally fine. Nice catch. Dang.
I think we should have, like, a test where we, like, encode that rule and then exhaustively test these functions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. There's not that many capabilities. We could exhaustively test everything based on a few rules.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Could somebody update the issue with the...
Yeah, I will do that. I have an example of where it's problematic.
Perfect. Does anybody else have anything, or should we do mine?
I have one I wanted to mention while we do have our full house of type theory nerds here.
Woohoo!
I wanted to talk a little bit about covariance and contravariance of type parameters.
Cool.
I think this is something we touched on in the past. Sean's recollection was that you thought it was a bad idea, Sylvan. I think my recollection was that we thought it was a good idea, except for the whole tuple subtype of any of empty interface thing, so which we resolved. So I'd like to kind of revisit the topic and figure out if we have a consensus about it. So just to give a quick thought, so Scala has it, and I'm not sure if other languages do too. I think maybe C# too. It has a little annotation you can put on a type parameter to mention that it makes the that it should be covariant or contravariant as opposed to invariant. And I would like to have that in Pony too, if it's feasible.
One of the things you can do with Pony is express contravariance using structural subtyping. But there must be, since you already know that, there must be some reason you don't want to do it.
So you're talking about things like read, seek, and array, for example?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is, I think it is the same thing that made me bring it up last time, is that it's pretty damn tedious to you go through and, like, you know, if you have a lot of method, it's pretty tedious to go through and, like, repeat all those on an interface. It would be nice to at least have some sugar for creating that interface or referencing it, possibly without having to, like, declare it. Like, if I could declare that I want to match on, like, array star would be, like, a different way of doing it. Like, and just say, give me the structural subtype of array if, you know, based on the argument, type argument varying.
But there isn't one, right? It depends on, there's some subset of functions for which A, an array A, is used in a covariant position, and there's some subset where A is used in a contravariant position.
Right.
Right? So array is like my favoritist example. My apologies. because of apply and update, right? It's so straightforward. So in apply, it's absolutely fine to have some array that returns only subtypes of the type that you're expecting, right?
Right.
So it's totally fine for an array of ducks to be used in apply where you expect an array of animal, right? Everything's good. In update, let's go with insert, because update is actually a slightly different case. But in insert, it's totally fine to use an array of animal where you'd expect an array of duck, because every time you try and put a duck in there, it's going to work just fine because duck is a subtype of animal in this crappy example. But now already we're at a position where in order to write array using co and contravariant indications over the type parameters, you're going to need two, right? But it turns out two isn't enough because now we have update.
Right, which needs to be invariant.
It has to be invariant. And so update has to be invariant. And we don't want to change the definition of update because when we have something concrete, we don't want it to change. Okay, so that's already a huge set of problems. And now we have exciting problems like saying, well, what does it mean for an array of a primitive type, right? A machine word type, I should say, not a primitive type. What does it mean, right, to have an array of U32 versus an array of the union type of all possible integers? When can you use it? And the answer is, oh God, we're in hell, because now we have the issue of when do we and do we not box and not box and et cetera, et cetera. And admittedly, some of the mangling that we have now might actually handle that pretty nicely under the covers, because the mangling in the Pony compiler is actually pretty awesome. But that's a whole nother issue, right? So logically, there are 3/4 different type parameters involved if you want to have explicit co and contravariance annotation.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple different things to hit there. Like one of them is that I could define a type that only needs, you know, covariance or only needs contravariance, like because it's not array and you don't need to put things in and get them out, right? Sure. If you only need to shove things into it or only need to get them out,
then you have a very strange container, yes.
Well, I mean, or you have something
sorry,
like...
Obviously, that was just, I'm sorry, that was just supposed to be a joke. Yes, there are many types where you only need...
Yeah, but I mean, like an iterator, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a stream of tokens or, you know, whatever. Like, so there's that. Like, there, I might, you know, array is not a great candidate for putting covariance, contravariance in the type parameters, but they're are the types that might be good candidates for it because they only use type parameter in one way. I guess the other thing to get at was when we talk about things like talking about array and read seek is a good topic, because like basically if I had a sugar for like give me an interface that matches all of the cases where it matches array for all the methods that the type parameter is used in a that's compatible with a covariant way. So things like read seek it would be an example of something that could be a little bit more automatic if we had some sugar for at the call site rather than at the type declaration site saying I'm using an array or I'm expecting here an array of covariant X.
I think use site variance would make sense. Like you would say like array plus any, and that would generate the interface with all the methods that are covariant or contravariant by that argument.
Right. And so write it not in the type definition Scala style, which is what leads you to array having 3/4 parameters. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I get into this need not so much with things like array, although that does happen from time to time. It's more often things like I'm trying to do some basic metaprogramming using generics to reduce duplication of stuff, and I know that I'm always using this in a covariant way, or I know that I'm always using it in a contravariant way, and I just want that interface, but instead I have to, you'll find if you look through my repositories, you'll find like a bunch of examples littered full of. I have an idiom where I say like X any is my name for if I have a type called X that takes type parameters, I define X any as the interface for all of the for all the methods that are agnostic of the type or covariant or contravariant, whatever I need for that case.
Right. Yeah.
So use site variance is more or less what Java has with the wildcards.
Funnily enough,
sort of.
Well, it's what I was just about to say, so I'm just going to let you do the talking.
Like in Java, you said like question mark extends A, but I mean we could have a simpler way, which is plus A or something like that.
Yeah, and that can be sound, and we have a way of dealing with it that Java doesn't, where under the hood we would be able to then generate an anonymous structural type. Right there.
So what I'm not sure is, do we actually make this a structural, like an interface, or do we make it a nominal type, but more, like do we make everything that happens to have the same methods a subtype of it or not?
Yeah.
Or do we also restrict it on the class name?
Well, I would let anything, I would definitely do it as a structural type. And the reason for that is it's going to, if we force it to be nominal, we're essentially backfitting specific nominal subtypes to specific instantiations of generics. And that sounds very painful, right? Because we don't know that those things exist until very late in code.
Well, it would be like halfway between a nominal and a structural type.
Right. Whereas if we just say it's a structural type, then we have a structural type, and that's great.
Yeah. But it would seem odd that you have some random type, which is a subtype of array plus any, just because it goes in the same thing.
An example that I think is actually kind of useful is you say, oh, I want array minus animal, right? So, and you can put anything in it that's a subtype of animal, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. I can now pass any kind of array-like thing in that slot. So in the case of a vector just gets, you could just put that directly in.
I think the question is whether that is useful to user or surprising, and maybe it's both.
Okay.
I would call it a surprise, because if you use the class, then as otherwise this is what interfaces are for. In that case, if you want to allow anything that has these methods, use an interface. But if you specifically use the class name, then I would be surprised if other types that expose the same set of methods. Like, we have a feature for this, which is interface.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the spot that I think I would be surprised too if I was allowed to pass a vector into somewhere where I typed any array plus animal, I was able to type like a vectored, you know, animal in there.
I think perhaps one of the reasons I find it distinctly unsurprising is an early feature that was discarded from Pony on the basis of not having a nice syntax for it was the idea of saying, being able to generate an interface for any arbitrary class to say, yeah, I know I defined a concrete type, but now I want the interface of that concrete type such that I can write my library that uses that concrete type as an exemplar. And yeah, we use it in certain places, but it actually would be okay in many places in the library to supply anything that is foo-like as opposed to foo. And this would be a way to do that really nicely for generics. And maybe that's why I don't find it surprising. On the other hand, you know, that feature didn't get implemented.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I would be happy either way. It's just a question of which is better.
Yeah.
Anyway, since I know that there's kind of general approval of use site variants notation, I'll take it back with an RFC later, and we can move on to another topic.
As long as it's not at definition of type site, then I'm all kinds of interested. But yeah,
okay.
You know my bias.
Yeah, and I think it's fine because if I wanted to, you know, like if I want to leave the plus out, I can always do a type alias, right? Like the use site makes more sense to me definitely after we talked about it. So I agree.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Out of curiosity, Sylvan, do you know why Scala went with definition site and not use site?
No, I don't actually.
Because everything I remember reading when I was working on generics last year was that use site is better than definition site. And yeah, I don't remember reading a single example of why to do definition site.
It's an excellent question. I don't know why that choice was made, but I can ask Heather Miller. Oh. She will know.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to see, can we move on to the next one? Or
yes, we
can. Yeah. Okay, so this one, Dippin asked me to bring this up. He's not able to attend. 2326. So it looks like Pony doesn't actually correctly, well, it will build on CentOS 7, but with every version of LLVM that Dippin has.
Not 2326?
It's 2623.
Excellent.
I'm not sure what I said. Add instructions for CentOS Red Hat Enterprise Linux build from source. So, it's Sylvan. Dippin's got to a certain point, and it does not worky. It does. It works, and the tests pass when you build it in debug, but not in optimization. And he wanted me to bring it up. For he dumped everything that he's found so far in there in hopes that somebody would help him be able to move forward. Even if folks don't have time to look at it all now.
Yeah, I'm just already baffled because everything he's done seems so reasonable. We don't have a situation.
There's a simple clash between libllvm and libstandard C++. Does it work? Is he using GCC or is he using Clang?
I can't answer any questions that are not in there. Okay. He does have a install Clang thing down towards the end.
Yeah.
Where that seems to be with Clang, and I think the previous ones are that he did with GCC.
Okay.
I think that seems to be what's going on here is he tried both.
Okay.
So it seems like LLVM is a like recurring problem.
Wouldn't it make sense to vendor it, or not vendor it, but like submodule it and build it as part of our thing? I know it takes ages, but you do it once.
This is the second time this has come up. And I have to admit, I'm starting to feel like this would be a decent idea. Like,
because this is what Rust does.
And then it would be like, right now as it stands, okay, in this particular case, 391 is an issue as well. But we have 4, 5, and 6, all of which have some type of different types of bugs. And now anybody, as we move forward, folks are going to have the issue of like, hey, they're on Arch and they have to figure out how to get LLVM 391 installed and built and everything. And that's kind of a high hurdle that people are going to have to go over in. And we never know when there's going to be an LLVM version where it's actually one where all of our stuff passes or whatnot. You know, I think trying to support all these different LLVM targets could end up being really problematic for us, and that the vendoring, like you suggest, Paul, and I think Wink suggested it on some issue a couple weeks ago and everything. And our big statement was, well, that can take an awful while to build, et cetera. But
if it gets us off if-defing our code all over the place for 391, 4, 5, and now 6.
Where 4, 5, and 6 all have bugs, yeah. Right? Yep. I mean, the idea that Pony is not going to be usable for people because their OS, their distro has like a specific LLVM version, you know,
is crazy talk.
It sucks, and I think we're getting to that point. It's like, well, okay, whatever was in 4 and 5, at least according to Gordon, appears to be fixed in 6, but 6 has some other problem, whereas 391 works, right? Like, maybe we stick with 391 for a while, and like then we can make a concerted effort at some point in the future to move off of 391 to something else where potentially we work with the LLVM folks to fix bugs or something. But trying to keep up with their rolling releases seems like a losing proposition.
So I think it makes sense. I can't speak for Windows or OS X, but I think it makes sense for Linux to give people good instructions for downloading the pre-built binaries and putting them in a location where somebody can detect them and all that stuff. Like, just try to make that process smooth. You know, it's something that I do to be able to test with multiple LLVM versions. I think it can make sense. Provide some assistance with figuring it out for folks, for Linux anyway. I don't know about OS X and Windows.
LLVM doesn't have very many, they don't cover very many platforms for their pre-builds. They just don't. Like, you have a limited number of ones that they've pre-built for. That's itself a problem.
Yeah, I guess I misspoke because I've been using the build it myself, so that's, yeah, you're right, because their Ubuntu 64-bit has some whatever stuff that's peculiar to Ubuntu on it, and I can't use it on my distro directly.
Yeah.
So you're right.
Do we happen to know if the Rust folks have had any issues with their approach to how they use LLVM?
I
don't know. It takes them a while to upgrade from one version to another.
Okay.
But I'm not aware of any specific problems.
I'll talk to Steve Klabnik and find out.
Yeah, Steve will know.
Yes, yeah, Steve should know, and I think Steve and I are friends, so I can chat with him about it.
That would be great, because if they're pretty happy with whatever approach they have, I'm really pretty keen to just copy their approach, right? They've looked into it a lot.
We did it for the RCs, and it's working really well.
And a lot of other stuff, right? Like, they do a lot of good work, so that's great.
Oh, speaking of Rust RCs, kind of changing topic, but recently they switched their like, how do we teach this to guide-level explanations and reference-level explanations. I think it works quite nicely. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
I have not seen that. If you could just pop a link somewhere to just some random thing that happens to do that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, we can talk about it later okay. offline. But I think they changed it like a few months ago, and it's quite nice, I think. And then we can switch to that.
So basically, but we have no idea for Dippin, right?
Sorry, I'm still looking at it. I apologize.
I just shot Steve a message. So
it's a boarding on free claiming that it's trying to free an invalid pointer out of make machine.
Could this be a LLVM bug that's in their CentOS stuff? I mean, we're using a prebuilt.
It really, really could be.
And it's something which is, it's a bug that only appears on their CentOS stuff and not the other stuff, maybe? I mean, I have no friggin' idea, right? But it only happens when it's optimized. So,
and it's whoa, Charlie.
Charlie, don't surf.
You know, I think he should, because in when he's GDBing the debug tests, the debug version of the tests, he's getting an abort, and he's getting an abort in string stream. He's getting an abort in string stream during static initialization of gtest. What? First of all, please apologize to Dippin for me. I feel that we have, in some sense, ruined his life that he is leading. Dippin has a comment on fairly far down on that. From what I understood, it seems that the PonyC tests is calling the standard basic O stream in libllvm instead of libstandard C++. Which looks like we have a libstandard C++ versus libc++ issue, I suspect. All right. It's consistent in some sense. Host.cc line 45 is it's an mdispose method. Oh, Lord. Yeah, this is a LinkedIn problem. I apologize for my long periods of silence there. I think actually going back to if Rust is rendering LLVM, maybe we should just copy that. I think that might actually sort of fix this issue.
Wait, so what are you thinking is happening? I was following and then I lost you right at the end.
I think we have a situation where whoever has built LLVM for this release has built it in such a way that the .so that they've built, because it's using an LLVM.so,
mm-hmm.
is statically linked to some implementation of libc++ or libstandard C++, and that it's mixing that up, and it's allocating from one allocator and freeing through some other allocator, and then the predictable result happens. But I'm not sure about that.
So, well, the way to figure that out would be is to build LLVM from scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you put all of that on there? So,
yeah. I will try.
So, yeah. So we came to the same sort of kind of thing, but yours is much, much smarter than mine.
It's got
more reasoning than mine. Mine was more of a, well, based on a lot of experience, my intuition would be from these signs, you know. So you're more like the 20th century doctor, and I was more like the 18th century doctor or something. When I'm like, well, I think, you know, some leeches might work here. Hey, every now and then leeches work.
Wow. Well,
every now and then you put leeches on people and the problem goes away.
Yeah. Okay, I'm typing up something on here. We'll see. Is there anything else we want to cover? I think we've hit the end of time, actually.
We have hit the end of time.
That's it. Time is over.
It just keeps on slipping into the future. All right. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'm going to stop recording now.